TFM.
Welcome, stargazers, to another episode of The Artificial Tango, our dedicated Star Trek Picard podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I feel like me, you've been wandering the streets of Los Angeles for the past week, you know, trying to figure out where the Watcher might be, where all sorts of things that could lead us to fixing history might be found.
Chris, this place is confusing. I don't know where I am, and honestly, I could use a little bit of help, so I'm glad you're here.
I am ready to help, if I can. So today we're going to be talking about the third episode of Star Trek Picard Season 2, Assimilation. Here's a quick rundown of the story. The Magistrate's attempt to stop Picard and his team doesn't get very far, as he is easily dispatched and the La Serena travels back to 2024 Los Angeles, which, sadly, did not involve styrofoam heads.
It did not.
It did not, and I was sad. Of course,
me too.
This is not without consequences, as Elnor is wounded and then dies, making it all the more essential that the crew succeed in their efforts to restore history. Once in the past, Rios finds himself in a difficult situation while Jean-Luc and Agnes negotiate with the Borg Queen, and Seven and Raffi use Kevin to their advantage. So, Matthew, let's just start with this whole magistrate bit here, because in our last episode of The Artificial Tango, we speculated on why they may have been dragging things out at the end of The Stargazer, and they allowed the magistrate to beam up to the La Serena. And we thought, well, maybe he needs to go with them and he's going to have a role to play. And this was a way of doing that. But nope, they just dragged it out a little bit more to start and then he was gone. And my reaction was, eh? I was a little surprised. How about you?
So last episode, you know, I had mentioned that I felt like I really hoped that that would have something to do with where we were going. And if it wasn't, you know, I said I felt like that they should have just placed that within this episode, right? And that it basically should have ended with them warping to, or with the magistrate done and them like conversing with the Borg Queen or something, you know, having the discussion of like, are you going to help us? Aren't you going to help us? Those kind of things. And maybe that being the cliffhanger. I felt like this was a kind of a silly cliffhanger because it did really seem too easy that they were just going to overcome this obstacle. Right. And it was, to me, it felt like, you know, this episode was shorter than the first two episodes. And so this felt like unneeded space in this episode. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I was disappointed that they decided to do this and to not make the magistrate mean anything.
Yeah. I think for me, I was hoping we were right last week because that could have made sense for the story. When they got rid of him so quickly at the beginning of this one, it felt like, again, it was a bridge that we didn't need, and it felt like filler at the beginning of the episode just to create drama. So again, it's like modern television where we've got to have more action, more drama, make things more visual instead of focusing on the story a little bit more. And I guess that's just the expectation of the general audience these days. I don't think it's the expectation of everyone watching. But I was thinking maybe what I would have done here is, if they were going to get rid of him so easily, that should have just happened at the end of the previous episode. And here they could pick up with the starship chase and it would have gotten us to Los Angeles a little bit more quickly. And the starship chase makes sense to me because, yeah, I think that, of course, they're going to pursue the La Serena. They're not just going to let it go.
Sure.
Having this one specific person beam up, you know, maybe because of his connection to Seven so that he could reveal that, hey, we know you're not who you say you are. You're not supposed to be here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think this part, I was just a bit surprised that things didn't play out to have more meaning.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, in the end, I guess it's nice that it doesn't last very long and then we can kind of move on to much more important things. And I think one of the things that's interesting is that we do have Q show up for a brief moment and he tells Picard that what is lost in the wake of your fear, mm-hmm. and that this is all he knows, which is the whole idea of you know, ships shooting at one another and everything.
Yeah.
And so again, we're getting this idea that something has, that there's something lost in Picard,
mm-hmm.
and it's this loss that Q is trying to accentuate by the situation that they were in there in that alternate history. Mm-hmm. And where, you know, they're having to go back in the past to alleviate. And so I thought that was really interesting. And then the Borg Queen says something really fascinating when she says that shattered to mend.
Right.
And I thought that was another really interesting key here, because you think about the idea of like a doctor, you know, having a bone that's mishealed. Mm-hmm. And they have to go in and they have to break that bone. They have to shatter it again, mm-hmm. so that they can mend it correctly. And so I was picking up that, like, that's kind of where we're going with Picard, right? We are going to shatter him. We are going to break him so that we can build him again in a way that's much more healthy and better for his body. So to me, that was actually really... those two lines just kind of like play off each other. They come very quickly from one another. And I was really fascinated by that.
Mm-hmm. So it could refer not only to fixing history, but to fixing Picard himself.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, because, right, you know, that's the theme that we've been playing with this whole time, is that what's happening is not just really about this weird stuff that Q is putting Picard through, but it's really a representation of what's happening on the inside of him, mm-hmm. that he's never dealt with.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about Q's comment, though, that this is the only life that Picard knows? If he's just referring to the space battles, the chasing and all, I think there's a lot more to Picard than that. And in the past, mm-hmm. Q has played on the other aspects of Picard's life. And so
sure.
Here that line felt a little bit odd to me.
You know, I think one of the things that he's saying is, and it ties into something that we hear from Agnes later, which is that you have emotions mm-hmm. that are basically there enough to get people to think you have them, but they're not the full depth. They're not the full range of emotions that one needs, right? And I think that there's something to that with Picard, in that he has had very deep emotions. We've seen that. It's not as though he's been somebody who is dead inside, mm-hmm. per se.
Right.
But there is a sense that he has hidden from the full range of human experience.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And I think that's obviously what, to me, that's what he's trying to get at.
Yeah.
You're hiding from the full range of human experience.
Right.
And that has left you to being less than you could be.
Yeah.
So,
well, we saw that at the end of All Good Things when he came in to play poker and he kind of realized that he's been locking himself away like that. And then we saw his reaction when Renee died in the fire in Generations, and mm-hmm. that emotion bubbling over, because he normally keeps that suppressed. So, and I think what your comment about what Girardi said about, well, you show enough emotions that people think that you have them, but it's not really there, is ties into what Guinan was telling him in the Stargazer about, you know, you need to explore inside. So I think there is a strong mm-hmm. connection there. Yeah. And so maybe mm-hmm. that's what Q is getting at when he says that. in the moment, I was thinking of all the possible things that Q might say to him at that moment. And that particular comment felt a little bit, it just felt different from the Q that we've known. But that may also be part of the point of this story, is that Q, like we talked about maybe two shows ago, Q himself seems unwell or seems damaged. And so his interaction with Picard may reflect that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think, you know, it's something that's really, so far, you know, we've talked about this before, but I think it bears repeating that this season seems very focused in its thematic elements. Mm-hmm. And it does feel very much like they are paying attention to where they've been in the previous episodes and continuing to build that. And these little nuggets, like what Q says, what the Borg Queen even says, you know, as she's making her time warp calculations and everything. I think all of that's just really playing into the overall thrust of where this season wants to go with these characters. And I think that's exciting that we want to actually talk about these characters in a way that they haven't been talked about before.
Right.
Like, we want to push these characters into places that they haven't been before. And I think, you know, one of the places that we see that, and it wasn't all that surprising to me, but it comes as a complete shock to Rafi, is that Picard thinks that they need the Borg Queen.
Right.
And that they are going to have to work to save the Borg Queen so that they can, because Picard knows they're going to need her on their way. And so to me, this was really fascinating. And this is something I've seen fans kind of complain about a little bit online. So I wanted to ask you about, she launches into this bitter diatribe against Picard and blaming him basically for what's happening and his relationship with Q, and pretending in many ways like this is all his fault.
Right.
As if he's asked for this, basically. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to ask you, do you feel like that was a place where the character of Rafi is just lashing out? Or do you feel like that there's some truth to that?
Yeah, this is something that I did think about a bit, because I felt like it goes back to Q, Picard, and their relationship and what we've seen in the past. And then the way that Rafi describes the interactions between the two of them that we've seen over the years, it doesn't reflect, it's not accurate. The way she describes it, I feel, is not accurate. She said, for decades, you've played games with whatever Q is, because that's what the two of you do, right? You joust, you screw around with people's lives for sport. I think Q, well, and Picard says, no, Rafi, that's what he does. And I think Picard is right. Yeah, that's what Q does. I don't think that's what Q and Picard do together. I don't think that Picard is a willing participant in the things that we've seen happen that involve Q. And so I did feel like Rafi is just lashing out because she's so hurt about Elnor's death. And so to answer your question there, definitely I feel like it was just her lashing out. I don't think that, if she's being rational, I don't think she really thinks that Picard has been doing this for decades with Q to affect the lives of other people. And I don't think that she really thinks that he's responsible for everything that's going on. I do think she's very, very wounded by Elnor's death. And one thing I've been thinking about as this season unfolds is, what is the relationship between Rafi and Elnor in the first place? Because they met each other in season one, and now they seem to have this close bond where I feel like Rafi has sort of adopted Elnor as her son, and she sees herself as a mother figure. And if you think back to what happened with her own son, she feels guilty for how she raised him, that she wasn't there for him. Mm-hmm. And now she's essentially lost her own son. And she's taken Elnor in. She's guiding him through his time at the academy. Mm-hmm. They're going to be together on the Excelsior. And so she feels this need to protect and nurture him. And then she loses him. So it's like she's lost her second son now. And she's blaming Picard for that. And she's lashing out.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree with you, Chris. I think you're like right on target with all that's going on with her emotionally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that what we see here is, and you rightly pointed out, I think she sees him as a son, and this is why this is so painful for her. She, you know, she can't believe that she's losing another. Mm-hmm. And two, what we've seen here is that Rafi has worked very diligently, it seems, to get herself to a more emotionally healthy place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And part of that had been, in some ways, being this surrogate mother for, you know, this child, basically, who does need help in understanding the world which he's in, because he isn't quite ready for all of it because of the way he was raised, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think all of this really speaks to, again, the character work that we're doing here, and we're dissecting these characters from season one, and I think we're doing it in a way that makes them better, in all honesty. I think we're really looking to understand what makes these characters tick, and in so many ways, each of these characters is struggling with very similar things, and so by dissecting one, we're actually helping to understand the whole. And I think what it also shows us is just how similar we are, more so than different, mm-hmm. even with our different perspectives. You know, we all have so many things that we can relate to another person with and understand another person with in a way that, you know, we might not have thought possible until we start kind of like looking at ourselves through these type of mirrors.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one more thing I really wanted to add to that, Chris, because I thought this was fascinating. You know, we talked about with last week, we had the allusions to different episode titles, mm-hmm. and the pendant that Elnor was wearing says, "Now I see only a moment." Mm-hmm. And it reminded me so much of where you get the episode title, A Mere Darkly, from 1 Corinthians, where it says, "For now I see in a mere darkly, but then face to face. Mm. Now I know in part, but then I shall see fully, even as also I was fully known." And does that not sound like what these characters are going through mm-hmm. in this season? Is that they all, in many ways, see themselves in a mere darkly, and this whole thing is about helping them to see themselves in a way that's more fully realized and open. In fact, we're even seeing that literally in this episode with 7 of 9. She is seeing herself in a completely different light. One, she doesn't have the Borg implants anymore. Mm-hmm. But two, that's causing her to actually even act different because she's seeing herself in a light she's never seen herself mm-hmm. before, which is basically less 7 and more Annika.
Yeah, yeah. And we're seeing that with many of the characters, of course.
Yes.
Seeing themselves in different ways. Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if that passage is, that verse is inspiration, you know, beyond the Inner Mirror Darkly portion of it. And it very well may be, and we might find out down the road from the writers that that was the case, but it certainly seems to be playing out, and I think likely it is.
Yeah, I hope so.
I think so. That's very interesting. Let's keep going through the story. Now, we're going to go back to 2024. I love that they actually leverage a technique, which I think's kind of nonsensical, but we've seen it before in Star Trek, and so they use the slingshot around the sun to propel themselves backwards. We said last time that we desperately hoped that we were going to see styrofoam heads floating around, just as we did in the voyage home. We did not get that, but what we did get, I felt was inspired by that. The close-ups of the heads, sort of the motion of it, I felt like it was a very modern adaptation of an 80s attempt to do a visual effect with 80s sensibility and technology and so forth. And here we got something that certainly reads much better to a modern audience. And I also like that there's the subtle indication of time reversing, essentially, where the sparks that are falling in the background reverse and start to go up. And then Agnes's tear stops and starts to come back up to her eyes. So there are these subtle visual cues. And it was, I have to say, maybe I didn't need to get those brownies ready after all for this, but I thought it was all right.
No, I thought the fact that they didn't try and repeat it completely.
Oh, sure. Would have been bad if they had actually done that.
But I do think that they did a great job of really creating something interesting. And like you said, the idea of like time changing in the way that it does, going backwards. In many ways, it reminded me of there's that moment in Zack Snyder's Justice League where the Flash is running so fast that time does stop and begins to move backwards. So things that have already happened actually slowly move backwards. And so they are, you know, they play with that idea here with the, you know, the tear rolling back up and the sparks going back up and everything. So I thought it was all really beautifully done and it just looked cool and, you know, had no problem with that whole idea. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting getting here to LA and, you know, I thought the experience that each of them has here is very different from the other. Rafi immediately gets into a fight with a homeless guy. But to me, the most interesting actually was, again, I think watching Seven in a situation to which I think you would have thought she would have been completely uncomfortable. And yet she passes with flying colors when the girl's like, "Are you a superhero?"
Right.
You know? And she just does the whole thing about like, can you keep a secret? And she winks at her. And it's just, there's this beauty in seeing that, like, there is something about Seven that is changing here. And part of that has to do with literally being able to see herself in a mirror differently. And that also meaning that people react to her differently because they're not seeing that. And she's not, the wall that she's had, she's lowering the shields because she doesn't have to keep them up every time because people don't realize that she is different from them or has been different from them just by looking at her anymore. Right. And I think there's something so interesting about that with her character.
Yeah, that's true. I also think that, well, a couple things. Seeing herself more as Annika again, she may be remembering a little bit more of how she felt as a young girl. And that helps her interact with this girl that she meets there. But I also think back to Voyager, you know, all the time that she spent helping Naomi Wildman learn and kind of nurturing her gave her some experience in dealing with children that she otherwise would not have had being with the Borg or if she had been on a ship where there weren't any children. And so she also has that experience to draw upon as well. But yeah, definitely what they're portraying in terms of how the simple disappearance of the Borg implants that remained in her, the disappearance of those have kind of a profound effect on how she sees herself and how she engages with the world.
Yeah, and I think it's just fun because, again, it's that movement of characters. And I think that's just really smart, you know, to be able to enjoy seeing the movement in the characters and to see them grow. I mean, that's what you watch these type of shows for. And so also, you know, I'll be interested to see where they take this, because this is something you could get super heavy-handed with. But I thought that they walked the line pretty well in this episode. And when Rafi talks about the idea of living in a world of contradictions, mm-hmm. I could not have responded better, because we legitimately do live in a world of complete contradiction, and people hold contradictory ideas and have no understanding of why that's wrong. You know, mm-hmm. like it's fascinating to me. And I think that it's just a really well done moment to help us see that our world is that way, people are that way, and I really, really appreciate that we're having this discussion, and I hope that it will continue to be kind of less over-exaggerated and more just a study of those contradictions, because I think it could be really well done. Because I think what I worry about is when you go too far to any one side,
mm-hmm.
I think then you're gonna lose the power of what you're trying to say.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. Because you can lose half your audience if you go too far to one side or the other in science fiction, sure. which really should be a bit more in broad terms to talk about issues instead of getting too specific. Yeah, mm-hmm. that scene yep. for me was interesting. I did want to talk to you a little bit about the Sanctuary Districts, because as Niners, of course, we're very familiar with the first time we saw them in past tense on DS9. But to what you're talking about, just this particular scene, you've got Rafi standing in a Sanctuary District. And just beyond the edge of the district, you can see the skyscrapers of downtown, the business district in Los Angeles. And there's that mural, that sign on the side of the building about a mission to Europa. And so I read it more in very big picture, broad terms of just society and the world and where we are, where, you know, as a species, we are a great contradiction. You see it in the world right now. I just finished writing my publisher's column for my business magazine, which goes to print today, in fact. And also, I wrote a very long piece that recaps an annual event that we have here with the American Chamber of Commerce in Japan that brings together pharmaceutical companies and entrepreneurs mm-hmm. to promote innovation and connect them. And the reason I bring it up is that there was one presentation this year that for me was like, with the backdrop of what's happening in Europe with the conflict in Ukraine, it was like what we saw here with this Europa mission and the Sanctuary District, and sort of how we can be in two drastically different places. There is this student who presented. He's 18 years old. He's Indian, but is from Japan, went to high school in Japan. Now he's a first year medical student in the UK. And while he was in high school, he designed this whole system based on the circulatory system of the octopus. So octopus has three hearts. They have a central heart and they have two branchial hearts. And inspired by that, he's created a system to help humans, of course, who have heart failure. And it's absolutely brilliant. And he did it when he's 18 years old. And now he's been connected with several major pharmaceutical companies to develop this, which could change the lives of hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people in the next decade. At the same time, we are just destroying other parts of the world. And then at the same time, we're working together. People who are destroying each other are working together in space. So there's like all this contradictory stuff going on all the time. And that's what I was thinking about when I was watching this, because I was thinking, yeah, it's exactly the situation where that Europa mission, which will help usher in the future that we think of as Star Trek, versus the sanctuary districts and the strife and everything else is going on.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting about this is that, you know, when that Deep Space Nine episode came out, the problem of homelessness was not a problem that we're seeing the same way we're seeing it now. Mm-hmm. And this is something to which, you know, I legitimately live in a place where I see this every single day. And I see it more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all over the place. And I think, you know, when those episodes came out on Deep Space Nine, we just didn't think it would be this big of a deal. And I think
it was more of a warning than a look at reality, yes. I suppose, yes. At the time.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And I think what I find so fascinating is that we do live in a world of contradictions, and we're seeing that obviously in this episode and how these people interact. I think the most damning thing about watching this now and pairing it with what we saw in Deep Space Nine is that we have obviously not been doing a good job.
Right. I think that's the point, and, actually, of showing it now.
And in many ways, I think not only are we not doing a good job, but we continue just to kind of keep doing the same things and pretend like that's going to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And I think what I'm seeing is, and again, I live in a place, I live near Portland, Oregon, and I live not far from Seattle, in the sense it's about 3 hours away. I know what this looks like better than a lot of people, mm-hmm. unless you live in like LA mm-hmm. or San Francisco, and then you know exactly what this looks like. We're not doing the right things. What we are doing is obviously not working.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to find a different way. And I can't say that, you know, allowing this to continue is loving or kind or in any way nurturing of the humanity mm-hmm. of these people.
Yeah.
And so I respond very heartfelt to what you're seeing in this mm-hmm. in this episode. We say that humans have dignity, but it's just a mess, right?
Yeah, like, right. So for me, I'm not in that situation. I don't see this stuff on a daily basis. We do have homeless in Tokyo, of course, but not like this at all, what you see here. But my reading of, like, in past tense, I felt it was more of a warning. And here also, I feel it is a warning because Picard has gone back. They've gone back to fix whatever went wrong in 2024 that caused history to go down this path of a totalitarian Earth. But I think this particular, even the visual here, is sort of a side element. It's not, you know, this is mm-hmm. not the thing that happened, of course, because this is ongoing. But it is mm-hmm. an opportunity to show that, hey, that thing that we warned you about,
yes,
30 years ago, was still going on, still a problem. We haven't solved it. Maybe it's getting worse. Mm-hmm. And this is a case where if we don't fix these problems, we're going to go down this bad path. And so we need to find solutions. I don't think that this is going to be a central part of the story of season two, but I think it was an opportunity for them to show, because Sisko said in the episode in past tense that at that point there were sanctuary districts like this in almost every major mm-hmm. city in the United States. And so here's a chance that they can show that, yep, in Los Angeles, the same thing was going on at this time. And also, the Borg Queen says we've arrived before the divergence mm-hmm. happens. Therefore, the things that Sisko and Bashir experience, that's still the same. At this point, it's still the same timeline.
Yes.
So it would be going on. So, mm-hmm. but for me overall, it's sort of the bigger picture of just the haves and the have-nots and how this rift in society is widening, where we have more and more people who are falling towards the have-not side of society.
Yes.
And we have a smaller number of people in the haves, and the rift is growing, and I don't see a lot of meaningful effort being made to prevent that from happening. And when I look at societies like the US, it is quite evident, because fortunately here in Japan, we don't have that kind of rift. Of course, there are people who do not have, and there are those that have more, but the bulk of people are much more together in the middle than we see in a lot of other societies. And that's just due to the nature of the culture largely, but the same the same problem could certainly happen here. And so it's a warning to everyone, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And then on, you know, on the other side, we do see that with, you know, what happens with Rios and the fact that the very place he's not supposed to end up, he ends up, which is in a hospital because, you know, his transport goes horribly wrong. I felt terrible for him. Like, that looked awful.
Yeah, I think it made sense to put Rios in this situation if you're going to talk about the, if you want to make the society feel more realistic in 2024, having Rios be the person who ends up in the situation does make sense. I found the character of Teresa to be interesting because she feels like the Rain Robinson of this visit to Los Angeles, where Tom Paris meets Rain Robinson in Futures End and Voyager when they go to Los Angeles. Now Rios meets Teresa here. And I felt a lot of similarities in their initial interactions. And
yeah, no, I think you've got a good point there.
Yeah. So. And some people have speculated that Rain Robinson might be the Watcher, which I think is unlikely, although it's possible. I mean, she's probably still around at this time if she lived out a natural life, because it's not that many years later. But she has no connection to Jean-Luc Picard. And I really think that anything in this story has to be connected to Jean-Luc Picard, because the core of the story is exploring his inside, his internal thoughts, what makes him who he is. And so I feel like the Watcher has to be someone who he will respond to and can guide him. And I don't think that would be Rain Robinson. But that's why I think it's Guinan. But anyway, I just thought the creative writing parallels between what we saw in Futures End and what we see here in this situation with Rios and Teresa was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, it is interesting too, just what we see with Rios, because, you know, we do have, again, this is very, very much a part of the world in which we live. And I think the problem is that even in television, you know, there's so much more nuance to these discussions than we give in a show, right?
Yeah.
And we're only, you know, going to talk about, you know, one point of view on the show. But I do think that they do a good job of saying, like, you know, as, and this makes sense, you know, this character is a doctor. And for them, you know, they have taken the Hippocratic Oath. So it doesn't really matter to them who these people are. If they are people that need help, then she's going to be there for them. And I think that's the reality of the situation that this character is in. And I don't necessarily know if that speaks to the overall nature of everything that goes into this discussion. But I think, again, it's handled with enough deftness so far that I think it does a great job of just, you know, helping us see that there, we all know that there's immigration issues, especially in the US. Mm-hmm. It's just, if you don't think that, then that's probably the biggest problem. There's definitely problems. And so how to fix them is that's the question. Like, if we could have actual discussions about that, that would be great. But we don't seem to be able to do that. And so I think here, I don't expect this show to try and give us a ton of actual answers.
No, I don't think so.
Because it's not really going to be possible.
Well, it's not the purpose of the season, I don't think. It's not the purpose of the story.
Yeah.
So they're
exactly.
They're like shining a light on it for a moment, but it's obviously not possible to go into an in-depth analysis of the situation.
Yeah. One thing that we have not talked about is Agnes and her experience here with the Borg Queen. And honestly, I think the most interesting part of this is really what, as much as we were talking about, we were learning about Seven, we really learn a lot about this character of Agnes and who she is and what her life has been like. And it is absolutely pretty, it's devastating who this poor girl is and how she feels and what she's been through and the intensity of her feelings. So, Chris, I just got to ask you, I mean, we learn one, which I think we probably have already all picked up, you know, she wishes Picard was her dad.
Yeah, right.
You know, this is why they have such a close relationship. She sees something in him that she gravitates towards. She has this intense desire of pain and anger that leads her to self-hatred to lead her to want to possibly end it all. And this is something I think the episode did such a good job of, as giving us this character who I've talked to some people and they've kind of found her somewhat obnoxious, but I felt like this really cracked open that character who even says, oh, humor, oh, there's nothing behind that door except for mirrors to deflect how I'm truly feeling to others. And this was a fantastically written part of the episode.
Well, using the Borg Queen as the mechanism to uncover that was a different approach, I think, than we've seen in Star Trek recently, where we have a lot more of the counseling approach. You know, let's sit down and let's have a counselor talk to us and talk about our feelings and try to make it a very comfortable situation, which, of course, I think is helpful for dealing with people in real life who are having trouble with emotions like that, feelings like that. Within the context of the Star Trek story, however, it was interesting to have the Borg Queen infiltrating her mind in a way similar to how the Borg will infiltrate technology to assimilate that. And it was also interesting to see how Jurati was able to push back against that. You know, it also shows she may have a lot of self-doubts and fears and a troubled past and all, but I think she also has a lot of strength because she's able to keep going, and she's able to push back against someone as strong as the Borg Queen, and she even gets the information that they need. She's able to extract that from the Borg Queen.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree with you. I just think this is a moment that was really fascinating. One, I love that she impresses the Borg Queen. I thought that was great. Yeah. But I also thought it was interesting because she's so good at, again, we walk through her psyche and who she is. She uses that to her ability to be able to fool the Borg Queen into giving her what she needs and what they need, and at the same time, not give the Borg Queen what she wants. So that, again, it just all works so well. And I think I'm hoping that, you know, as we crack this character open, she's much more interesting when we can then see what she's doing. Like when the humor comes, we know exactly why that's happening, you know, and to begin to hopefully like Seven, like Picard, like all of these characters, we are going to actually see her find a way to healing, which would be really cool. And what I love about this is that in many ways, they are all doing this together. Like, we need one another in community to help us be able to do this. We can't do this alone. And I think that's something that is really special about all of this, is that there is something about having another person there to help you through something that makes all the difference. I love it.
Well, yeah, they have to work together. And I think that the writers have done a really good job of putting each character into the correct situation to play up to their strengths of what they can contribute to the story, what they can contribute to the mission, so that they can resolve things. And that includes the Borg Queen. And, you know, Picard, he's having to face up to that aspect of his past as well. Geraghty's facing aspects of her past, and Picard is as well, because he was Locutus. He did have this connection to the Borg Queen. And yes. I also found interesting, I don't know if this was intended as a comment about Voyager or not, but I did find it interesting that Picard told the Borg Queen that, "I'm not going to negotiate with you." And my first thought was how much Janeway negotiated with the Borg Queen. And Picard is like, "I'm not going to do that."
Yep.
One other thing I would say here about a comment that Picard makes is that after Elnor dies and Raffi rattles off her kind of attack on Picard and Q, Picard says, "If we fail here, we fail Elnor and everyone in our homeworld. Therefore, despite the fact that it's against every impulse that we feel inside us, we have to press on." And I just thought that line was nice, and it might be a bit of subtle commentary about the rifts in society today, which you and I often talk about on our podcasts, where people feel so strongly about their position, and often it's a social issue, that they just refuse to work together. They refuse to show any flexibility. They won't talk to the other side, because here, you know, Raffi wants the Borg Queen gone, and Picard's saying, "Well, but okay, we don't like the Borg Queen, but we need the Borg Queen because we can't get to the destination. We can't get to the point where we've healed things if we don't work together, even though we may not like each other or we may have differences." So just that little line stood out to me.
No, I think that's a really good point, Chris. And I think that's something that's really interesting. And one of the things I think the beauty of the episode shows, right, you know, we do see Raffi here, who is livid at Picard, and not for all correct reasons, you know, mainly because of the pain that she's in. And yet, she's going to work with Picard, right? And I think that's something that, you know, like you said, we have to find ways to be able to be there for each other and work together and come together. Because without that, nothing will ever happen. Nothing will ever change, and nothing will ever get better. And we will basically just be stuck in a quagmire. Mm-hmm. And if you think things are bad now, just wait till you see, obviously, what happens when we just stop altogether.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, like you said, that's one of the things that we're actually beginning to see, is that that's starting to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's just complete gridlock into the society. Yeah.
Now, I will say that I have faith that we will overcome this. And I think that at some point we will start listening to each other again, and we will start coming back together, because people will reach a point where they feel like, okay, it's enough. Like, we have to get back to some functional method of discourse. But I've been feeling that way for quite a long time, and it hasn't quite happened yet. So I've actually gotten a bit worse in some respects, but I still do believe that we will get there. I think it's good to have warnings like we're getting in this season of Picard to hopefully make us stop and realize that we can't stay on that path, because if we do stay on that path, it will lead to terrible things.
Well, and it's a path that's just unsustainable, you know, and I think that's something that we, you know, absolutely see already beginning to show And that is kind of the scary part, like you said, where we are. And so one little note that I had, Chris, that I really appreciate about the episode. Did you notice that the beginning of the episode where the Borg Queen is crawling towards Agnes, the nice movement of Borg music from First Contact?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I made a note about that. I thought that was really nicely done. It was fairly subtle. But they picked up that musical cue from First Contact, and it was a nice touch, especially as a musician. I really appreciated that.
Yep. And I don't know why you wouldn't. I mean, and I think that's one of the things that I'm, again, just as we kind of like get towards wrapping up, like, I think this is something that I'm seeing in Star Trek Picard, is we're just not afraid to use what we've had before and reference it and be proud of it, right? And that's that little moment there is just indicative in the entire season so far. So just hopefully that continues. So I guess I'm very interested then for you, what do you think, Chris? Like, if you were going to rate this episode of Star Trek Picard, what do you think?
Yeah. My final thoughts on the episode are, I think it furthers the story pretty well. I still think the pacing is a little bit odd in spots, but they covered a lot of ground in this episode, a lot of character ground, as we talked about. And I am still eager to find out who the Watcher is. We didn't talk about it, actually. I did some research because, being an editor, part of my job every day is to do research. And so I did look up the coordinates that Agnes stole from the Borg Queen. And of course, those who live in Los Angeles, our friends who live in Los Angeles, already know this, but I looked it up. It's Pershing Square. It's a small public park in downtown Los Angeles, and it's a few blocks away from the building that Raffi and Seven go to, where they want to go up to the very top so that they can find out if there's any alien activity going on. And in the episode, they go to a building called the Mark Ridge Industrial Tower, which in real life is actually the Wilshire Grand Center, which is the tallest building in Los Angeles. And then I went back to the Stargazer to see when Picard beamed down to go to Guinan's bar to see if I could place where that is. There's not enough information there to go on. There's a plaque on the wall that says Forward Avenue Heritage District, which is not a real district at this point. But I kind of have a feeling that the place where Picard went is maybe near that area of Pershing Square. Now, the Borg Queen did mention the number 15 at one point, where she says, "The Watcher, 15, and then it stops. And I haven't placed what that might mean yet, but it's fun anyway to do that, do a little bit of research and find out. So that's just a little sidebar. But yeah, my final thoughts are just that, yeah, I think the story is moving along quite well. And if I'm going to give it a rating, I'm going to give it 7 softer landing spots for Rios.
Nice. Interesting that they landed, apparently, at Picard's family home, I guess?
I guess so. Close it to wasn't it, quite so. Clear, but yeah, that's what it seemed to be. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the thing that I was most surprised is that the season just continues to be good. And I want that to be the thing that we get as we move forward to the rest of the season. So I'm very happy where we are right now. I think it was another good episode of the show. And I would give this 4 out of 5 funner than Kevin's.
Oh, Kevin.
Ah, Kevin.
I love that moment, actually. That was...
Kevin is not funner than me.
That was quite fun. All right, everyone. Well, we would love to hear your thoughts on the third episode of Star Trek Picard Season 2, Assimilation. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way to join in a conversation is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That's our closed listeners group. If you're already a member, you know what to do. If you're not, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come right on up. If not, just type the whole name. It is a closed group, so if you're joining, please answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You can also send us email. If you go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there and choose to send to a show and choose the artificial tango, and that'll come to Matthew and me by email. And you can find us in social media. Our username on Twitter is TrekFM. Also on Instagram, everywhere in social media. In fact, our username is TrekFM, and we would love to hear your thoughts on the episode and on our discussion. And if your podcast app of choice gives you the option to leave a rating and a review, we would love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not digging through files of things that Jurati stole from the Borg Queen, where can people find you?
Well, you could find me all over the place under social media under the name MattRushing02. Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero, all of those type of places. You can also find me here on the network doing a few other shows, doing the 602 Club, which is our whole other side of the network that doesn't have anything to do with Star Trek, because there's so much to talk about there. So we'd love for you to join us. We've got a couple bonus shows as well in the 602 Club feed. So there's a lot of bang for your buck there. I can also find me doing Warp 5 and Literary Treks and the Orb. Warp 5, Chris, you and I are talking about Star Trek Enterprise as we walk through every single episode to celebrate 20 years of that show. Literary Treks, as I said, we've got the books and the comics of Star Trek, talking about all of that, interviewing authors, and the Orb, you and I also talk Deep Space Nine, which is always a joy, and we've talked a little bit about that here. We've actually talked about those episodes of Deep Space Nine that we referenced so heavily. So, you know, definitely something actually I would encourage everybody to check out. And then over on the Nerd Party Network, you can find me doing a Finnish show I did with Drake Goffman. That was all about Harry Potter. It's called Owl Post. We did every single chapter, one chapter at a time. And you can also find me doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, is you're not trying to figure out who this Watcher is and if you've got the right apparel for 2024 LA, where can people find you?
Well, yeah, when I'm not in the wardrobe there trying to pick out just the right outfit to blend in, you can find me elsewhere on the network, as you mentioned, talking DS9 with you on the Orb. Also, Larry Nemechek and I do The Ready Room from time to time. There is Interphase and, of course, loving our 20th anniversary rewatch of Enterprise, which you and I are doing together on Warp 5. Hope everyone will check those out. You can also find me in social media. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That's my username everywhere, but Twitter is where I'm most active, and I would love to chat with you there. If you would like to help us keep the Artificial Tango and the 602 Club and everything else we're doing here on the network going, we could definitely use your help. If you'd like to find out how to get involved in the network and how to support what we're doing, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We could really use your support to keep everything going. It takes a great deal of money to produce the shows, push them out to you, cover the bandwidth and everything, and we definitely could use help. And speaking of that, I would like to thank our associate producer of the Artificial Tango, Cornelia Rutner. She is supporting us through Patreon and is an associate producer of the show. And Cornelia, we thank you so much for your support. And also everyone else who's supporting the network, thank you. We would not be able to do this without you. Well, Matthew, I'm going to head down to Pershing Square and see if I can find that cool new bar everyone's talking about.
Chris, that sounds like a fantastic idea. So let's make it so.